You're listening to The Jewish Truth Bomb with Lenny Goldberg.
Hey, this is Lenny Goldberg, and thanks for joining me today. The doctrine of purity of arms, so-called Jewish war ethics, which so many love to talk about when it comes to the IDF, that the IDF is the most moral army in the world because we take into account civilian casualties more than any other army. I even heard a ratio that generals like to brag about, that it's 1-to-1. For every one terrorist killed, only one Arab civilian is killed. And that's a tremendous ratio. It's usually 20-to-1, 10-to-1. And so we're supposed to be really proud of that, that we risk the lives of our soldiers for innocent civilians who 87% of them support the massacre on October 7th. Now, the problem is this dribble, it's not limited to the enlightened leftist types. Not at all. We usually attribute it to the left, that they're the architects of this mishugas. But the fact is, Orthodox Jews, in their own way, are also preaching purity of arms. I'm holding in my hand Torah tidbits that the OU puts out every Shabbat. And I want to read something here that really typifies what you hear all the time from Orthodox rabbis about war and violence. This is typical. And it's from the OU executive vice president, Rabbi Moshe Hauer. And the name of the article he wrote is The Voice of Yaakov in a Violent World. And it opens like this. As Jews, we are characterized by the Kol Yaakov, the voice of Yaakov, that is distinguished by both the spiritual power of prayer and the use of pleasant and persuasive speech. In our Parsha, and we're talking about Parshat Chukat, we read this past Shabbat, in our Parsha, Moses deployed both when he sent a message to the king of Edom, asking his permission to pass through his territory on the way to the land of Canaan. To avoid confrontation, he humbly asked permission of the king. And so the rabbi wants to teach us that, you see, when you go out to war, you're nice. You ask permission to go through Edom. Now, we all know where he's getting at. He wants to show that Judaism is nice. We don't look for violence. We don't look for wars. But the thing is, you're using as an example of Jewish warfare, the conquest of the East Bank. We weren't commanded to conquer the East Bank. We were just trying to get to Eretz Yisrael, and Edom was blocking us. So we have no beef with Edom. So we spoke nicely to them, just like we spoke to Moab. We said, please let us through, because our fight wasn't against them. They were just in our way as we're trying to get to the land of Israel. So of course we spoke nice. Now, we all know that we're in a time of war now with savage beasts, rapists, murderers, killers of babies. Maybe it's time to talk about something else other than that we have to be nice during war. Maybe you could bring some from the book of Joshua, how we weren't so nice and we wiped everybody out. And of course, because it was Parshat Chukat this past Shabbat, everyone's talking about Moses, who was supposed to speak to the rock, but he hit the rock. And we all know, of course, that we don't want to hit things. That's violent. You got to speak to the rock. And that's why he was punished, because we're the people of the voice of Yaakov. It's Esav, after all, who has those bloody hands of war. We're spiritual beings who pray. And if we have to go to war, that's the b'dieved. We don't really want to go to war, but we got no choice. That's how they like to present things. Somehow they think that sounds good to the Western Jew. And remember, this is a Zionist publication. They're supposed to be pro-Eretz Israel, and they are. But where's the fight? Why can't you bring a couple articles of Jewish war ethics in the Tanakh? We're in a fight for our lives right now against a vicious enemy. Wouldn't it be appropriate to bring down laws of war and inspiration from King David's wars against the enemy, instead of going through all these acrobatics to try to show us how nice Judaism is through the Parsha? Don't these rabbis read Tanakh? They don't learn about Yoav ben Tzruya? Let me tell you a little story about Yoav ben Tzruya, David's captain of the host. Yoav ben Tzruya's goal was to kill as many of the enemy as possible. And in order to give an incentive that his men would kill as many as the enemy as possible, he would offer them prizes and money. The more people you kill, the more money I'm going to give you. It's kind of like something that happened in the National Football League, Lahavdil, that there was a coach. He put a bounty on the opposing team's quarterback, that whoever hurts the opposing quarterback, he's going to get a couple thousand bucks as a prize. Well, that's what Yoav did. In the book of Shmuel, it talks about a civil war between David's men and Avshalom's men. Avshalom was David's son who rebelled against him. And a war broke out. Yeah, a civil war, Jew against Jew. And there were good guys and bad guys. David's men were the good guys. Avshalom's men were the bad guys, even though they were Jews. Anyway, David's men were more experienced. They were able to overcome Avshalom's men. And at one point, Avshalom was running on his mule and he got caught in a tree because he had this wonderful hair that he was always bragging about. And as measure for measure, his mule kept running and he got stuck in a tree. His hair got caught in the branches and he was hanging by his hair because their battle was in a forest, a lot of trees there. So he's hanging from a tree. And one of the soldiers of Yoav, Ben Tsruya, he sees him hanging from the tree and he runs to Yoav and he says, "I just saw Avshalom hanging from an oak tree." And Yoav said, "Why didn't you kill him? If you killed him, I would have given you 10 shekels of silver and a chagorah," which is a belt. Now, what is this belt he would give him? So that Mikra explains that there was a special belt that they would give to the good warriors. It was embroidered with all kinds of stones, and it was the belt, the girdle, to hold your sword. That is, the sword's very important. And some people had a really fancy belt for that sword. Just like people want to buy a beautiful etrog for Sukkot. In those days, in the days when Jews were normal, they want a beautiful chagura, a beautiful belt to hold the sword on their hip. Because it's very important, the sword. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you how important the sword is. Not for Esau, for Jacob, for the Jewish people. If you go to the end of the Chumash, the very last verse that Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Jewish people, the very last thing he says to them, his final message, check it out at the end of the Chumash. He says, "Ashrechi Yisrael, mi kamocha, praiseworthy are you, Israel. Va'asher cheruv ga'avatecha, your sword is your pride. V'ikchashu oivecha, your enemies will deny you. V'atal b'moteum tidroch, but you will stop on their high places." Yeah, that was Moshe Rabbeinu's final message to the Jewish people. Your sword is your pride. And so being that we're in a war of survival against a vicious enemy, can we just stop with these laddy-daddy Dvar Torahs already? A little fire and brimstone, a little inspiration from King David and Yoav and Joshua. That's what we want to hear. That's what we need. But if we really want to get down to the source of the purity of arms doctrine, and where it came from, there's somebody in Israel named Asa Kasher. You can look him up. And he's the one who stands behind the distorted code of war ethics that the IDF employs today. He's the intellectual, the philosopher of Israeli culture. And he designed the handbook of war that the IDF goes by, the IDF code of ethics. He calls the book The Spirit of the IDF. And he's the one who crafted the purity of arms doctrine. And so this fellow, Asa Kasher, he's the one who stands behind the underlying principles that endanger our soldiers on the battlefield. He's the one who says that that's the moral thing to do. Now, this man is a fanatical leftist. He hates the religious Jews, hates the Haredim with a passion, and he gives himself away. He's been saying that the soldiers who are killed in Rafiah, they're dying in vain. Why are they dying? Because of Benjamin Netanyahu's ambition to stay in power. That's what the guru, Asa Kasher, thinks. And when he talks about the war in Gaza, he says that we have to stop using the term victory. That's not the proper term. This is what he said in a lecture the other day. Victory is not the right term. And gvura, we have to stop using the word gvura. Gvura means, heroism, strength. Okay, I get it. He's a leftist fanatic. But the thing is, he is the guru of the Benny Gantzes and the Eisenkatz. Now, Benny Gantz will never say that he's against victory. He won't repeat the words of Asa Kasher, because you can't just remove that word from the vocabulary, victory and heroism, because we need those words. I mean, those are concepts that are critical to our survival. Of course we want victory and we want gvura. So what Gantz does, he redefines the terms. What is victory for him? Victory for Benny Gantz and those of his ilk is to get back a hostage. He doesn't see the entire nation, which he's put into danger. And that's why Gidy Eisenkot and Benny Gantz and others are pushing for a second hostage release at all costs. They're agreeing to the Hamas demands in order to free the hostages. And of course, agreeing to the demands of the Hamas in order to free the hostages, that's capitulation. And right now, the camp within the government that's ready to accept the hostage deal is led by Gadi Eisenkot, who believes you have to take any measure and you have to put any Hamas demand on the table in the name of a second hostage deal, even if that means releasing all of the Arab terrorists and prisoners from Israeli jails. And he's joined by Benny Gantz and, you know who else? Aryeh Deri. Yeah, we all love to see it when a hostage is reunited with his family. But giving in to the Hamas in order to save one life? That's insane. That's not victory. That's not gvura. That's weakness. It's a victory of the bad over the good. And when you see it on TV, that they release a hostage back into the arms of his family, it makes a great soundbite or a video bite, whatever you want to call it. But that's not victory. That's capitulation, because you've saved one soul and you've endangered the rest of the nation. Now, this doctrine of Asa Kasher, purity of arms, it's alive and well in Gaza and in the north. And many, many good Jews, even right-wing nationalist Jews, they subscribe to it. And you'll see them on TV boasting of the fact that, no, no, we're not genocidal. Israel has lost many soldiers because we've gone out of our way to avoid civilian casualties. That is, we brag about this. We're so happy to explain to the world that we're keeping with our policy of Tohara Neshek, purity of arms. I want to read a few sentences by Rabbi Kahana on this subject, something he wrote back in 1987. The first and purest obligation of any Jew, of any Jewish commander, or any Jewish government, is to assure that all that is humanly possible is done to safeguard the lives of his own soldiers. We send our boys into battle. The elementary duty is to safeguard their lives. To deliberately order soldiers to risk their lives to save those of Arab civilians, that is murder. And that goes for the north as well, because it should be clear. The Arab civilians in Lebanon, in Beirut, they cheer every terrorist shelling of Nahariya and Kiryat Shmona and other centers of Jewish civilians. Every Arab in Lebanon delights in Jewish deaths. Purity of arms? It's a farce. Menachem Begin, in the pre-state days, he ordered two British soldiers. He just plucked them at random and he hanged them in retaliation for Irgun soldiers who were hung. That's what Begin did. They just grabbed soldiers off the street, British soldiers, and they hung them. Where was the purity of arms? Why was it okay then to pluck random British soldiers off the street and hang them? Anyway, that's part of a long piece that the rabbi wrote on the subject of purity of arms. And when you hear the stories of soldiers or ex-soldiers, when they're telling their war stories about the time when they went and raided a house somewhere and they saw a little Arab boy, they're very upset that the family is using that little child, that he's part of the war effort. How could they do such a thing? If a Jew learns properly and he's normal and he has normal instincts, he should have no problem with killing so-called innocents, even children, in such a situation of war. And if you learn Torah properly, you'll have no problem with it. If you learn about King Saul and what happened with Amalek, Saul was commanded to obliterate them from man to woman, from child to infant, to camel to donkey. How he had mercy and he spared the king and he said to Hashem, what if the women sinned? And if the women sinned, what if the children sinned? And if the children sinned, what if the animals sinned that we have to wipe everything out? And Hashem said to King Saul, Al tiyat tzadik hobe, don't be such a tzadik. Don't be more righteous than your creator. When you learn those lessons and you internalize it and you learn Tanakh properly, you'll have no problem killing these so-called innocents. I'm going to read from Bamidbar Rabbah, Parshat Pinchas, what it says. If you have mercy on them, they will go to war against you. It is similar to a shepherd tending his sheep in the forest who found a sickly baby wolf, like the little Arab boy who opened the door when the soldiers came to raid them. Anyway, he found a sickly baby wolf. He had pity on it and nursed it from the goats. So the shepherd nursed the sickly baby wolf. When his employer saw it, he said, kill him, have no pity on him, lest he cause disaster to the flocks. That is, this baby wolf is going to grow up and he's going to cause disaster to the flocks. But the shepherd didn't listen to him. And when the wolf grew, he would see a sheep and he would kill it. He would see a goat and he would eat it. And the boss said to the shepherd, did I not tell you not to have pity on it? And in the same way, Moses told Israel, if you have pity on them, those that shall remain of them shall be as thorns in your eyes and as thistles in your sides, and they shall harass you in the land which you dwell. That was Moses giving those last instructions to the Jewish people before they conquered Eretz Israel. Don't have pity on them, even the little ones, because those little ones are going to grow up and they're going to be big ones, big terrorists instead of little terrorists. And so we see an astounding difference between the morality of true Judaism and the distorted ethics of the schizophrenic Jews, the gentilized, who on one hand are very nationalistic and know that we have to wipe out Gaza, but they got this complex about the innocents, or they think that we're able to reform the citizens, that we'll put in new leadership and we'll change their minds. They're being indoctrinated now by the Hamas, but you know what? We're going to change the leadership and we're going to make them moderate. All those Arab citizens there, who are you kidding? But I'm telling you that if you learn these midrashim that I just brought down, and you learn about King Saul, and you learn about the wars of King David, which I've brought on these podcasts, it'll make it a lot easier for you to unleash collective punishment, because you realize what will happen if you leave these people alive. This Purity of Arms War Ethics book by Asa Kasher should be burnt. You probably know that the north of Israel is just burning up. The Galil is on fire. We're in a horrendous heat wave these last few weeks. And the Hezbollah knows it. And so they're shooting their rockets at places that looks like they're missing their mark, but they're not. They're landing in fields and they're burning the fields. And by the way, the Iron Dome is also causing tons of fires in the Galil. Because like I said, we're in a heat wave and the whole Galil is just a timber box waiting to ignite. And so the Hezbollah keeps shooting their missiles and burning us up. And I want to play for you what Jonathan Pollard said about this. He interviews regularly with Rabbi Bar Chaim of Machon Shiloh. And Pollard is great because he doesn't just kvetch about the problem. He also gives a strategy what to do about it. And this is what he said.
Hezbollah is using now the weather and their rocket bombardments in many cases as yet another weapon against us. I sat down and I looked at the meteorological conditions in Lebanon right now, and they're worse than ours. And I looked at the condition of their land in the Bekaa Valley, which is the heartland of the Hezbollah, and in southern Lebanon. And they are in far worse shape than we are as far as their vulnerability to fire. So I went out with a piece proposing that we initiate a strategic fire bombardment campaign in the Bekaa Valley and in South Lebanon, using primarily napalm, low-flying aircraft, dumping napalm everywhere, turning the Bekaa Valley into basically an inferno. And since a lot of those villages rely primarily on agriculture, you're impoverishing Hezbollah's resource base, basically human resource base at this point. They've got poppy fields in the Bekaa Valley, you know, are comparable to what exists in Afghanistan. So they'll continue to burn our land, literally burn it, while we just sit and do nothing. We have targeted assassinations. That's fine. Continue with that. And then sit back and just wait. The bulk of their money comes from the drugs trade. You burn up the Bekaa Valley. You burn up southern Lebanon. And boy, you've really put a crimp in their financial support. I don't know what they're waiting for in the north. I really don't. I think they're scared to death.
So that's what's happening in the north. Basically nothing other than having nice pictures of Yoav Gallant looking through his binoculars. They love to show that in the media. Yoav Gallant looking through his binoculars, looking real professional. But in reality, we're just sitting there and waiting, and our soldiers are sitting ducks. And you heard in that interview where Pollard mentions that sometimes Israel targets high military commanders in the Hezbollah and the Hamas. And just a few days ago, the IDF targeted Hamas military chief Mohammed Deif, or Def, whatever his name is, the leader of the Qassam Brigades. And the strike left devastation in the area. Like I said, 90 Gazans were killed. And wow, the Israeli left, they were against it for two major reasons. Number one, if you kill this Mohammed, another Mohammed's going to come along. So what'd you do? And furthermore, a lot of innocents were killed. And so, yeah, the left is right. There's no shortage of Mohammeds to replace this guy. Let's say there's 1.5 million Arabs in Gaza. So you have 1.5 million replacements. And so in order to answer the left, we have to propose expulsion of the Arabs of Gaza. And by doing that, there'll be no replacement for this Mohammed Deif, and also there'll be no innocents killed because they won't be there. Finally, before signing off, I want to end with an aliyah pitch. You know, they tried to kill Donald Trump. It's a miracle he's alive. They hated him so much. And what did he do to arouse such hate? That he wants to stop the illegals from entering the country? He wants to stop inflation? He wants to stop America from being a dump, which most of its cities already are? Yet the incitement to murder him on a daily basis, when you call somebody every day, every minute, a Nazi, a threat to democracy, of course there's going to be some nut out there who will now see it some great mitzvah to kill Trump. Everybody saw this coming. But we have to realize that America is really slipping into third world territory. Most of the country is a hellhole, and you can replace the word hell with something else. And America was probably just a centimeter away from civil war and chaos. And you know that somehow the Jew's going to be in the middle. And so, Jew, escape that hellhole, because even if Trump wins, the United States has reached the point of no return. Nobody is going to be able to deport 7 million illegals. And that's just one problem. If Trump wins, there's going to be mass riots and violence. That's what the left does. And the Jews are going to be targeted because we're already being targeted on campuses, in the streets, all the anti-Israel, anti-Jewish stuff that's going on. It's just going to continue. And it's only going to step up. And the virulence of the Jew hatred is going to step up. That's it for me. And if you want to hear more, you can tune into Lenny Goldberg's Bible classes. We learn in the Bible all about true Jewish leaders, scholar warriors in the mold of David HaMelech. And so you can hear my shirim if you Google Lenny Goldberg's Bible classes. You can hear it on Spotify and other platforms. And if you want to buy some great Kahana books by Binyamin Kahana, or Meir Kahana, check out my website, LennyGoldberg.com. There's all kinds of good stuff there. Links to this podcast, links to the shiur. And again, Rabbi Kahana books. He's the one you should be reading today because he called this. What's going on today, he saw as clear as day. And he also offered solutions. What the right wing is saying today, Rabbi Kahana said it over 40 years ago. You know how the joke goes. What's the difference between Rabbi Kahana and the rest of the nationalist camp? About 40 years. And I'll be back next week, God willing, same time, same station.